I wasn't the one. Not me. I was trying to be Harriet Tubman. I was trying to be Sojourner Truth. I was trying to be Frederick Douglass. I was trying to be a big, loud-ass mofo from Brooklyn saying, not one more child, not one more time, and not on my damn watch. And I don't care who is sitting anywhere. They want to go low. They want to recall the drug war. They want to say that we're going to incarcerate us some more. We're going to say we're not going to take one step back. If you think you want to go low, we're going to go hard. That's who we are. That's who we are. So,
all right.
Let them know, anyone within reach of your voice, on Twitter, on Facebook, yes, I know that's Instagram. I didn't always know. Oh, and that's our website. So these are the hashtags we're using today, No More Drug War or N1SB, not one step back. Please use them, spread the conversation. It's all of us talking to the people we know that helps get it out here. Let me say a couple of things. We have emergency responders in the room. There's times that many of us, even those of us who are used to these conversations, can be triggered. And if that is you, please come find me. I will be here all day, and we will have someone who can work with you. It's not a counseling session, but it is somebody who can hold you if you need to be held and listen to you and not let you feel triggered alone. No one in here is going to feel that today. If any of my emergency responders are here already, would you please stand? There's more, and there will be more people coming throughout the course of the day. If you know somebody who is in an overdose situation, we have emergency responders. Do not let anybody be ill on your watch. Please come and find me and call 911 as well. That said, I want to give you a couple of notes about how the day will go and how we'll ask folks to interact. We're gonna open up with a keynote framing address from the godmother of this work, the woman who has taught us all and held us all. Dr. Deborah Small is here today, and we're gonna hear from her. And then we're gonna have three roundtables, each roughly for an hour and a half. The first part of the roundtable for roughly 45 minutes, we're gonna hear from our gathering of experts. And then we will hear from all of you. So we'd like to encourage you to be part of that conversation. And then finally, I want to say that at the end of the day, we will hear from Maxine Waters, who will be here at 5 o'clock today to address us. And before I go on, you know, Brian mentioned her, but I can't get off this stage without thanking Allison, is she here? She in the room? She's working. I'm gonna say something that I know some of you will understand and some of you will hear for the first time. I live in New York, where so many black people have been displaced from work. And so for me to come down to Atlanta and see a building run by my people like this, with this level of excellence is something I don't get to see every day, and I don't take it for granted when I do. It used to be like this a lot. But Fulton Street still in Brooklyn hasn't been rebuilt since the rebellions in 1968. The only areas that have been rebuilt, we've been kicked out of, like an ethnic cleansing. You can see it on Auburn Street here in Atlanta. You can see it in Tulsa, where there used to be a Black Wall Street. And so to come down and see what Allison manages to pull together with her team, with Tony and everybody else, is beyond masterful. It's late nights, it's knowing every nook and cranny, it's grace, it's elegance, and although she is not here, give her a round of applause, because that sister is everything. And my own team, so dear to me, led by Nyoka and Laini, This is also work you do on weekends. It's work you do in the small hours. It's work you do even though you've had 3 hours of sleep with a brand new baby. And so let me acknowledge Laini over here. And I don't know where Nyoka got to. She in here somewhere, but Laini and Nyoka. And finally, I want to say why we're also doing this. We used to do our partner gatherings as small inward-facing discussions, almost like a staff meeting. And we get together, about 40 of us someplace, and we talk about different issues in drug policy, the 40 or so partners that make up DPA's national partnership of aligned organizations working together. And last year, we did it at Columbia, forward-facing, and they said, let's do it again. And so if you are a DPA partner, I want you to now stand, because you make DPA what it is. You are our heart and our soul. These are our partners. That's a lot of y'all. I need to acknowledge our team at Drug Policy Alliance in full, because there's no way that Nyoka and Laini and I could do this together. And so for the DPA staff that has traveled across time zones and is driven here, Tony Newman, I see you. Eunices, I see you. Please let everybody see you. Is Art Way in the house? If I'm forgetting your name, don't neglect to stand. If you are a DPA staff member, let the team see you. Let our people see you. And before I take my leave, let me make note of a woman who has been a thought partner with me. And as I told her, my first believer, when I said, I'm not sure what it is, but just work with me. We're going to transform people's lives. Just sat with me over tea and over coffee and over lunches and over a number of months, and nobody has ever given money to the program that we do. Nothing. It was all internally driven by DPA general operating funds. But that changed this damn year, I'll tell you that. And Chloe Coburn is in the house from Open Philanthropy, and she is making a huge difference across Chloe, across the criminal justice field. And so with that said, and with my gratitude, I'm going to ask Laini to come up here, because last year, for the first time, Jay-Z took a public political opinion. We knew he had his politics. We knew what he was doing on the low for Black Lives Matter, but he had never assigned his name to anything. But he did, working in collaboration with Dream Hampton, the filmmaker and organizer, and Revolve Impact, and we made this video that ran on the front page of the New York Times and went viral and was seen by more than 15 million people at the end of the day. So Laini, can you come here? Because I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to get out of the way.
In 1986, when I was coming of age, Ronald Reagan doubled down on the war on drugs that had been started by Richard Nixon in 1971. Drugs were bad, fried your brain. And drug dealers were monsters, the sole reason neighborhoods and major cities were failing. No one wanted to talk about Reaganomics and the ending of social safety nets, the defunding of schools and the loss of jobs in cities across America. Young men like me who hustled became the sole villain, and drug addicts lacked moral fortitude. In the 1990s, incarceration rates in the U.S. blew up. Today, we imprison more people than any other country in the world, China, Russia, Iran, Cuba, all countries we consider autocratic and repressive. Yeah, more than them. Judges' hands were tied by tough-on-crime laws, and they were forced to hand out mandatory life sentences for simple possession and low-level drug sales. My home state of New York started this with Rockefeller laws. Then the feds made distinctions between people who sold powder cocaine and crack cocaine, even though they were the same drug. Only difference is how you take it. And even though white people used and sold crack more than black people, somehow it was black people who went to prison. The media ignored actual data to this day. Crack is still talked about as a black problem. The NYPD raided our Brooklyn neighborhoods while Manhattan bankers openly used coke with impunity. The war on drugs exploded the U.S. prison population, disproportionately locking away black and Latinos. Our prison population grew more than 900%, When the war on drugs began in 1971, our prison population was 200,000. Today it is over 2 million. Long after the crack era ended, we continued our war on drugs. There were more than 1.5 million drug arrests in 2014. More than 80% were for possession only. Almost half were for marijuana. People are finally talking about treating addiction to harder drugs as a health crisis, but there's no compassionate language about drug dealers. Unless, of course, we're talking about places like Colorado, whose state economy got a huge boost by the above-ground marijuana industry. A few states south in Louisiana, they're still handing out mandatory sentences for people who sell weed, despite a booming and celebrated $50 billion legal marijuana industry. Most states still disproportionately hand out mandatory sentences to Black and Latinos with drug cases. If you're entrepreneurial and live in one of the many states that are passing legalized laws, you may still face barriers participating in an above-ground economy. Venture capitalists migrate to these states to open multi-billion dollar operations, but former felons can't open a dispensary. Lots of times those felonies were drug charges, caught by poor people who sold drugs for a living, but are now prohibited from participating in one of the fastest growing economies. Got it? In states like New York, where holding marijuana is no longer grounds for arrest, police issue possession citations in Black and Latino neighborhoods at a far higher rate than other neighborhoods. Kids in Crown Heights are constantly stopped and ticketed for trees. Kids at dorms in Columbia, where rates of marijuana use are equal to or worse than those in the hood, are never targeted or ticketed. Rates of drug use are as high as they were when Nixon declared this so-called war in 1971. 45 years later, it's time to rethink our policies and laws. The war on drugs is an epic fail.